what is up, beautiful people? So glad you've tuned into Current Sports on this hump day. Happy Wednesday, folks. Man, oh man, we have a great show in store for you all today. We'll talk about the debut for Tigers pitcher David Price. Yes, Dave was on the mound yesterday and a pretty solid start for him. Gotta love that. We'll talk about David Price. We'll also dive into Barbershop Wednesday as we discuss women in coaching. Will there ever be a woman to coach the likes of a mainstream men's American sport? We'll debate about that. Also discuss the Paul George injury and its effect on the national USA teams and whether or not it's worth it to have your star player go and play nationally. We'll debate about that as well. We'll also talk Lions, Rory McIlroy, and so much more. But hey, as custom here on the show, here's your man, Alex Sharp, with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
Good afternoon. Happy hump day. I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Wednesday, August 6th. MSC women's golfer Lindsay McPherson was awarded a sponsorship by Meijer to compete in the LPGA Classic and compete with professionals on the tour from August 7th to 10th. She joins University of Michigan's Grace Choi with the sponsorship, and the tournament will take place in Grand Rapids. McPherson is entering her senior season at Michigan State and competed in a career-high 7 tournaments this past season for the Spartans. She tied a career-best 9th at the Big Ten Championships to help lead the Spartans to their 3rd Big Ten title in 4 years. And MSU's own Fatai Alashe, captain of the U23 Portland Timbers in soccer, led the team to a tie in the MLS All-Star festivities. The All-Star committee picked up some of the best homegrown players who have been in the MLS system to play in the homegrown MLS game. Fatai is a senior and captain of MSU Soccer, who has played in 11 games with 906 minutes. He has 2 goals and 1 assist throughout the season. In college basketball, more of Michigan State's non-conference schedule was released on Tuesday. The Spartans will host Santa Clara at Breslin before heading to Orlando to play Rider on Thanksgiving in the Orlando Classic Tournament. The winner of the Rider game will play the winner of Marquette and Georgia Tech. And on the other side of the bracket, teams include Kansas, Tennessee, Rhode Island, and Santa Clara as well. Earlier, Michigan State plays Duke at the Champions Classic in Indianapolis on November 18th. Kansas and Kentucky are also in the tournament. Cy Younger David Price took the mound last night for the Tigers and pitched a solid outing in an extra inning victory over the New York Yankees 4-3. Price went 8 2/3 innings and racked up 12 strikeouts. Alex Avila hit a solo shot in the 12th inning to take a 4-3 lead, and Joe Nathan came out for the save. The series against the Yankees is now tied at 1-1. Game 3 is tonight against the Yanks, with Justin Verlander on the mound against Chris Capuano. In NBA news, LeBron James met with new head coach David Blatt for the first time on Tuesday, according to ESPN. It is also reported that LeBron has lost about 10 pounds and has gotten thinner. The Cavs are now in talks with Mike Miller and Sean Marion on potentially joining Team James in Cleveland. The MLS All-Star festivities continue tonight as the All-Stars play Bayern Munich, a German professional soccer team. They played in the finals of the Champions League in Europe last year and won the Champions League the year before. The MLS All-Star game airs tonight at 9:30 p.m. on ESPN2. And following a win at Bridgestone, golfer Rory McIlroy is gathering praise from some of the greats. Jack Nicklaus was on the Mike and Mike show this morning and spoke high praises of Rory. Quote, "I think Rory is an unbelievable talent," Nicklaus said. "I love his swing, I love his rhythm, I love his moxie. He's got a little swagger there. It's a little bit cocky, but not offensive. I like that. I like the self-confidence in a young man. He's got an unbelievable amount of speed in his golf swing. He obviously hits the ball a heck of a long way. I think Rory has an opportunity to win 15 or 20 majors or whatever he wants to do if he wants to keep playing. But you just don't know what the guy's priorities are going to be in life 10 years from now." And finally, in bizarre football news, a man has been charged for urinating on former Baltimore Ravens owner Art Modell. The fan, Paul Serbu, posted the video on YouTube and was charged with disorderly conduct in a cemetery. The crime goes as a misdemeanor, and the man could face up to 2 years in jail and a $500 fine. Modell died in 2012 at the age of 87 and spent 43 years as an NFL owner. He oversaw the Browns until the team moved to Baltimore in 1996 to become the Baltimore Ravens. It left many Browns fans, like this one, with a sour taste. And those are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this hump day, August 6th. Time to send it back to Al to start the show. Lines are now open.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alex, for those current sports quick hit headliners. I'm still chuckling about I think that's the first time we've had a story of that liking on current sports before, Alex. A man charged with urinating on the Modell grave, really. That's pretty and you listen to that, he can face what you won't probably, but up to 2 years in jail and a $500 fine. That's pretty crazy. How'd you find? I didn't see that one, Alex.
It was front page of ESPN as of a couple hours ago. You know, maybe we'll see Titus Young.
I'm not surprised.
A little urination on William Clay Ford.
Oh gosh, but I had to like stop what I was doing. When you were going through their headliners when you said that one. I'm like, what? What is this? Oh boy, that's comedy. Okay, welcome to the show, folks. Happy Wednesday. We have a great show in store for you all. Again, our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls throughout this entire hour. Folks, boy, it's been a busy, busy morning. It's always a busy morning for me, Alex, as we not only, you know, I would prep for the Current Sports Radio show, but Current Sports TV, with it being moved to now 10 a.m., you know, I begin my day pretty early now. And I just finished taping Current Sports TV. Still got my Maybelline makeup on, as manly as that sounds. I have it on right now. It's glistening on my forehead. I did not wash it off. But I just got done hitting the air on for the TV show, sitting down with Ithaca High School football coach Terry Hesbrook. Terry Hesbrook, he's just a classy guy. He's one of my I know I've said this about many, because there are many coaches around the Mid-Michigan area that are just classy guys. I mean, it's hard to find a coach around this area that's not liking to the media, you know, especially when you talk about high school sports. And Terry Hesbrook is the epitome of class, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I've been covering the guy ever since I was an intern over at WLNS TV6, and he was so kind and gracious to come in today. Drove from Ithaca, which is about, about a 30, 35-minute drive, maybe a little less than that. But, man, oh, man, they have the winningest right now. They have the longest winning streak in the entire state of Michigan for high school football, and they also have the longest winning streak in the entire nation. I'm talking about every single high school in this here nation, the U.S. of A. Ithaca High School has the longest winning streak, tied actually with a school out in Iowa. And I'm going to bring up the name of that school in just a sec. But both of these schools, Ithaca and this other school out in Iowa, they are tied with the longest winning streak in 11-man football at 56 straight wins. 56! That's crazy. Redonkulous, as I love to say. Again, this school out in Iowa, Alex, is Iowa City Regina. Have you ever heard of that school?
No.
Never heard of that school either. It was new to me when I was doing some research this morning before my, prepping for my interview with Terry. But yeah, Iowa City Regina is tied with Ithaca for the longest high school 11-man football winning streak in the entire nation.
Yeah.
It's truly, that's unbelievable.
Well, Al, it's funny because you figure that with the winning streaks like these, you figure a lot of talent comes out of these schools. And did you talk to Coach Hesbrook about that?
Oh, yeah. We definitely hit on that. He sent 12 players from his Ithaca football program to go on to play in the next level in college football. One of those happened to be, you know, he definitely talked about guys like, you know, Travis Smith, who will be playing for Wake Forest, I believe, next year.
Wow.
And Alex Nisnek. How can you forget about Alex?
Right.
Alex Nisnet was great. He plays for CMU right now. So, but right now, I believe Alex is kind of playing like the backup quarterback to,
right,
of course, another local guy, local kid. Oh my goodness, his name is right on the tip of my tongue. He played for LCC. He was a quarterback for Lansing Catholic, and he's there now. Oh man, I forget his name. But anyway, he's definitely sent. You know, we talked about how, you know, he sent 12 of his players from Ithaca High School on the play now for college football. And I asked him about just how the buzz in recruiting, how that's changed from when he first got the job, you know, 11 years back, up till now. And he really hit on that and said that, hey, he has, you know, scouts coming from everywhere and recruits coming from everywhere to see his kids now, because everybody knows about the streak now. Everybody knows about the streak. I mean, it's hard to ignore, especially in Ithaca, because, you know, Ithaca is such a small town, and football is everything to them now. And, you know, it's hard to ignore, and everybody is definitely caught, you know, caught the attention of this team just because of it. It's a gaudy streak. It's really remarkable. And you know what? You don't want to miss this episode tomorrow night at 10 p.m. folks on WKAR TV, because Terry has some pretty big news. Now, he shared one component of that big news with me on the show. I don't want to give it up. I do not want to give it up, but he let the cat out the bag when it comes to one of those things. And he'll talk about it on tomorrow's Current Sports. You have to tune in. So that's a big tease I'm giving you guys.
Can you give a hint?
I can. I think I got a pretty good hint here. If I had to give a hint, I would just say, this is your hint. This is your hint, folks. And it's pretty big news. This is the hint. Impossible is nothing. That's the hint.
That does not give any clues.
When you find out what this is, you're going to be like, wow, Al, that was a genius hint. When you find out, again, the hint is, Alex, impossible is nothing. Okay? So if you want to know what the big news that Terry Hesburgh has to share about his Ithaca football program, you can tune in to Current Sports tomorrow night at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. You do not want to miss that. And also, I have to give a shout-out. You know, it kind of wore me out this morning. I'm a little tired. I got my coffee here. But they were a great group of kids, a great audience today. I have to give a shout-out to the YMCA of Oak Park on the south side of Lansing. Kids 8 to 13 years old came out. We had about 36 of them today. Man, oh, man, it was a fun time. They packed the house, and they were so enthusiastic as guests. They had a bunch of questions for how we put together the show, how I got involved with sports broadcasting, my worst moment on air. They had so many questions for me. They had a lot of great questions for Terry as well. Oh, boy, just a great group of kids. And get this, you know, a great time today, Alex, where after the taping was done, right, and, you know, I'm frantic. I'm trying to prepare for the radio show. They wanted autographs from the entire Current Sports production crew. Brett King was down there signing autographs, and Dan was signing autographs. It was great. So they were a great group of kids. So shout out to the YMCA of Oak Park. Again, catch that episode tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Alex, you want to take a guess at what?
I know Impossible is Nothing is an Iggy Azalea song.
That has nothing to do with it. I doubt it. Terry Hesburgh even knows who Iggy Azalea is. So, but yeah.
No,
not close.
I have no idea.
Well, tune in. That's a tease for you.
Yeah.
So, I'll probably tell you off the air after the show. But definitely, for all you other folks, tune in tomorrow. Tomorrow night, 10 p.m., WKAR-TV, Current Sports TV with Terry Hesburgh. All right, great stuff. Well, Alex, well, we have a full plate to talk about. Again, our phone lines are open right now. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You know, each and every Wednesday here on Current Sports, later on the show today, we bring you our Barbershop Wednesday segment. And we call it Barbershop Wednesday because every time, you guys know, when you go to, you know, you try to get a fly cut at the barbershop, you walk in and there is immediately, usually a sports debate, 9 times out of 10, especially, you know, where I'm from in Detroit, and even my barbershop up here on the south side of Lansing. I mean, there's always a sports debate going on. Everybody feels as though, you know, they're the next Stephen A. or Skip Bayless in the barbershop. So we love to bring that type of feel here to Current Sports and debate about, hot button topics. And today's Current Sports, we bring to you Barbershop Wednesday. It's going to be a two-parter because there are two hot topics, if you will, that many people can't wait to weigh in on. And we asked you to call in to give your thoughts on this. I am certainly, I'm certainly excited to get your thoughts on these two subjects. Or if you just want to call in and give your thoughts on one of them, hey, as long as you're calling in and debating, embracing debate with us, if you will. Our first segment for Barbershop Wednesday, which we'll be coming to in just a sec, we're going to talk about the effect of Paul George's injury on national team sports in America. Because I tell you what, when Paul George went down, Alex, when that moment happened this past weekend, and I watched it live and still cringe to this day if I ever watch the video again, Paul George, he goes down with this horrific injury, and you immediately hear chatter about, oh, man, well, if he was resting up this offseason and not even been trying to, you know, wouldn't even been, you know, trying to make the USA national team, this wouldn't have happened in the first place. And then I go, you know, and look at some other players who decided to decline. You know, a guy like Manu Ginobili, who had a chance to play internationally for the FIBA World Basketball Championships and, you know, decided to decline because he wanted to rest up and save his body for the upcoming NBA season. He's no spring chicken as it is. So, and it really just begs the question now whether or not it's worth it to risk the possibility of being injured and going over and playing for the national team and representing your country. Because a lot of people have a lot of thoughts on that. So that's part one of our Barbershop Wednesday. And part two of our Barbershop Wednesday, we're going to be talking about, of course, we talked about this as soon as it happened via Twitter during yesterday's Current Sports, as Becky Hammon now becomes the very first female assistant coach in NBA history. The very first one to do it. She is a pioneer, if you will. And we want to beg the question here whether or not there will ever be a woman coach, head coach, in mainstream men's American sports. That's the question we're throwing out there. And if so, when would that be? Would it be 5-10 years from now? And what will it take for that to happen? So that's our two-part Barbershop Wednesday segment. Again, you can call in at 517-355-9527. If you don't happen to be by a phone or, you know, you can't call in because you may be at work listening to us at work, you can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. So, hot button topics right there for him, Alex. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this, too.
Yeah, and we got in a little bit yesterday on the air, but yeah, we'll save it for later. I don't want to get too much into it right now.
Yeah, well that's a great tease. Okay, well, to start off the show, let's talk Tigers, man. David Price. He makes his first start in a Tigers uniform on the road in the Bronx facing the Yankees. And you know what? I thought it was pretty solid. And a thrilling win for the Tigers is they got a 4-3 win over the New York Yankees now to tie this four-game series. Tonight, JV Justin Verlander will be taking the mound. That's going to be an exciting game. We'll see what happens as he faces Chris Cupano. And, you know, going back to Price, though. You know, Price, I thought, Alex, looking at that game, because I watched that entire game, I thought David Price was pretty solid, man. David Price, he gave up 2 solo home runs, but also pitched 8 2/3 innings. He went really deep into the game and really kept the Tigers close and gave them a chance to win down the stretch. And you and I were talking before the show, and, you know, looking at the pitches that David Price gave up for those homers, I mean, it just seemed to me that he was just trying to search for that control. And again, him and Avila trying to get on the same page. This is his first start. He kind of left a few fastballs over the plate. And, you know, a team like the Yankees, they're definitely going to capitalize on those moments. But he did a good job of rebounding from those moments. And after, you know, those two homers found the seats, hey, he seemed to settle in, if you ask me.
Yeah, and aside from just settling in, the hits he gave off to Ellsbury and some of the other Yankees, they were all, a lot of them were outside pitches. Aside from the home run that was down the middle, a lot of Yankees hitters were reaching for Price's pitches outside, and that was the only contact they could really make off him for the night. So,
right.
Exceeded my expectations completely. We both said 6-7 innings.
Yeah, I thought they were going to pull him in the seventh.
Yeah, and I honestly thought, you know, he went 8 2/3. I thought they might have pulled him for that last inning. They had the base runner on. They put Jabba in finally, but it was even questionable that they were going to leave him in for the ninth because I thought that maybe he might blow the game. He was already up in his pitch count pretty high.
I think, you know, looking back at it, I might have would have pulled him early.
Yeah. I would not have let him pitch the ninth inning.
Yeah, meaning, especially with his first start, too. I probably would have took him out maybe right after the sixth inning and said, okay, David, nice job. Let's see what our relief pitching can do. And, hey, how about that? Speaking of that that bullpen, excuse me, that bullpen was pretty good last night. Yeah. You know, Jabba Chamberlain. Joaquin Soria and Joe Nathan, they combined to throw 3 1/3 scoreless innings. It was really impressive. And Nathan, you know, he gave up a long fly ball to Chase Headley that appeared like it might leave the park, but it fell right at the track.
Yep.
I thought the overall body of work from those three guys, Jabba Chamberlain, who of course was playing his former team in the New York Yankees for the first time.
Right.
He was a little nervous too. I don't know if you saw his quotes before the game, but he was a bit nervous going out there.
Yeah, and there were some crowd chanting saying Jabba sucks, Jabba. You know, they were hating on Jabba.
Yeah, because he hit the all, you know, gracious Derek Jeter. You know, Derek Jeter is the king of New York, man. If you even come close to hitting him, New York Yankees fans aren't going to take too kindly about that. So, yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, but honestly, I thought that Jabba pitching against his former team, they'd light him up a little bit. They kind of know how to play him. That wasn't the case, though. So, you know, pretty good job there for Jabba to stay under control and really, you know, with him and earlier on in the year before the break, he was phasing a little bit in and out. For him to come to his former team, yeah, he hit Jeter. He remained his composure. Jeff Jones came out on the mound to talk about, you know, what he's going to do for the next batter to make sure his nerves were under control and he didn't get it in his head too much. So, yeah, good composure from him, Al.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, for me, I think the guy who really needed this confidence booster is the guy that I at least thought would need this confidence booster. And I have to go with Joaquin Soria. I think Joaquin, especially with having the first two outings that he had with the Detroit Tigers, I mean, it was like, okay, this isn't a Joaquin we've seen in Texas, you know? And for him to come out and just to seem more, he seemed more comfortable out there on the mound yesterday. I thought that was certainly a key for him. And how about the bats? You know, I always talk about the bats going cold for the Tigers. I mean, some guys definitely stepped up and made some things happen at bat yesterday. And of course, you know, the guy who celebrated of them all happened to be Alex Avila, who, you know, just crushed that homer, that solo shot to put the Tigers up and eventually closing out the deal. But you saw guys like, you know, Miguel Cabrera, who, looking at the stat line, he had 5 at-bats. He had, you know, 1 hit. Hey, that's fine. He made contact there. V-Mart, you know, he pulled in a run, had 2 hits on 4 at-bats. Torii Hunter, I hope he's okay. I hope Torii's okay because, you saw that area pitch that connected on his, I believe it was his left hand.
Yeah, they talked last night that it was just a contusion. X-rays right. were negative. He's going to be okay, they believe.
Right, exactly. Yeah, looking at Torii Hunter's status right now, the X-rays, as you just talked about, you know, he had thought after that he had might have broken it. But, you know, the results began to come in, and one by one the pitchers revealed pretty good news. There was no break, only broken blood vessels and a little bit of swelling. So he's listed as day-to-day. But Torii, you know, he went out early, didn't have any hits last night, but deserves. I mean, he went out early. So, I mean, you can't hold that against him. You know, a guy like Nick Castellanos, hey, how about him? He also connected on a hit. And Alex Avila was great last night, of course, connecting. And Andrew Romine as well. So, you know, that's the type of this is the type of production I'm talking about from the Tigers, though. If they get consistent hitting like this, I'm not saying everybody in the bullpen has to be lights out, you know, connecting on everything. But if they get some hitting from guys other than Miguel Cabrera and V-Mart, and, you know, they get some quality at-bats from other guys, especially deep in that lineup, the Tigers are a force to be reckoned with. And coupled with, you know, the bullpen, like, again, the bullpen doesn't pitch like this every single game. But getting that type of production, it has to be a big confidence booster, for all of them, you know? And if the Tigers play like this, it's hard to beat them, Alex, period. But the thing is, the C word is so big in baseball, consistency, man.
And let's not forget, the Yankees bullpen was very good last night. Went 4 innings
right.
strong, no runs.
And they usually are.
Barely gave up any hits. So for the relief pitching, you know, to come up against that and really get a good handle on it for the Tigers, that was great, you know, pawning off that. And for Alex Avila, like you said, and Roma, and some of these hitters, to get off at the end of the game, 12th inning, to get hits and that solo shot like that off the Yankees relief pitching, which is one of the league's best, outstanding.
Yeah, it certainly was. So, JV hits the mound tonight. Alex, do you have the Tigers winning this series?
I think they're going to do it, man.
You think they will?
JV's pretty good against the Yankees usually.
Right.
Looking at his past, he pitches pretty well in that park. So I like the Tigers tonight.
I'm still going with the split. I think when it's all said and done, you'll see a 2-2 game split. I think the Yankees and the Tigers split the rest of the series. I think they win tonight, and I think the Yankees take the next one.
Okay.
So we'll see. We'll definitely see, man. And how about Derek Jeter? I got to mention Derek Jeter because Derek Jeter, you know, we saw Jabba Chamberlain nail him in the back, and right after that. You know, as Derek took his coveted place on that first base, Jabba runs over to him and kind of looks at him and says, "Hey, my bad, man," and was really, really sorry. And after the game, he even went to say that, you know, again, this is Jabba's first time, you know, playing the Yankees. since, you know, he's, you know, since that trade happened. And, you know, after the game, he said, quote, "I've never felt worse in my life," end quote. Just shows you the amount of respect that everyone has when it comes to the man known as Derek Jeter. I'm going to miss DJ. Yeah. I will say that. I am going to miss Derek Jeter. I feel as though the game is just, it's got more of a, I don't know, it's like having, you know, a Jordan in the game. When Jordan was playing, there was a certain buzz about the game. Even when Kobe Bryant's playing, you know, when the greats are out there, I'm going to miss the buzz that Derek Jeter creates in the game of baseball. For many years, he was the face of baseball, man, and he just has that superstar swag, that swag-oo, as I like to call it, that is just, it's bar none. It can't be matched, man.
Yeah, and another thing I'll miss about Derek Jeter, and they were talking about this during the game, is he comes out in the mound, he gives a nod to the manager, he jokes around, just a great personality to the game.
He is.
And enjoyable to listen to, he jokes around a lot with the media guys. What a great market to cover.
I really wish I got a chance to interview Derek Jeter. He's a classy guy.
In Kalamazoo, maybe he'll come back around here.
Maybe do some charitable work, and I'll take a ride out to K-Zoo.
Yeah.
You know? All right, well, we'll see. All right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we're going to start our Barbershop Wednesday segment, as we just alluded to. Part one, we're going to talk about the effect of Paul George's injury on national team sports right here in America. You don't want to miss that. All of that and so much more. Current Sports comes back in just a sec. All right. Hey, well, that's a little interesting shindig right there, Alex. It's World Wednesday today, where Alex plays music from all across the world. Where is that, Italy?
That is some French music.
Oh, some French. Okay, I knew that. I knew that, man. I don't know why.
Well, it's tough. Some similar sounding songs.
Yeah, some similar. It has a similar feel to it. Okay, thanks a lot, Alex, for that. Well, folks, let's start our Barber Shop Wednesday segment.
Yeah, I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but healthy conversation.
That's right, Cedric. Just nothing but healthy combo, okay? And we encourage you to be a part of that combo right here on today's Current Sports by picking up that phone and dialing 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Part one of our Barbershop Wednesday segment, I want to really dive into the effect of Paul George's injury on just national team sports right here in America, Alex, because when this happened, I'm sure many of our listeners out there saw the video. I remember why I watched it live. There was nothing else on TV. I didn't even know the exhibition game was on until I started flipping through on the guide and watching that game in the second half. And Paul George goes up to try and contest a fast break layup. He comes down, his foot hits the basketball sanction, completely snaps. It is a gruesome, horrific injury. One of the worst injuries I've seen in a game of basketball. And he goes down, and, you know, the response and the media coverage that this got from people was really just alarming. I mean, I don't know if you saw the hashtag Pray for Paul George that was going around on Instagram and Twitter and so on and so forth on various social media sites, Alex. And, you know, speaking on that really quick, Alex, you know, I was on Twitter the other day, when I believe it was yesterday, actually, and I retweeted a tweet. And this is a tweet that I've and a notion that I've seen other people do as well. It's so funny how, you know, this whole Pray for Paul George initiative, I mean, it spread like rapid fire. You couldn't go on social media without seeing it. Within moments, it was a national trending topic in Twitter. And it's so funny. I was looking at a tweet yesterday, and it came from actually Graham Couch, of course, who was a colleague of ours in the area who covers sports for the Atlantic State Journal, who's been on the show before. And he went on to tweet this, quote, "You have 230 children in Gaza who were just killed, and you have hashtag pray for Paul George, who's coming home to 5 years, $80 million, and just bought a Ferrari as well." I add that in there, end quote. So I just thought that was, you know, I hope Paul George gets well, but, you know, it just shows you sometimes how we forget about just, you know, other people in the world who are going through many, many things. I definitely agree with that, too. That's the same thing I said. I mean, this is, I wish, you know, attention that the Paul George injury got, I wish some of that attention, or at least more of that attention, got, you know, placed on a lot of the national tragedies that we definitely see across, not even just in our nation, but across the world as well. But anyway, that's just a side rant about this whole thing. But anyway, this injury really now begs the question whether or not, you know, an NBA team, let's just put your feet in the shoes of an NBA GM here, Alex. If you're a GM or even a head coach who has a superstar, let's say you are the GM of the Indiana Pacers, you just lose one of your premier guys in Lance Stephenson, the Michael Jordan and company over with the Charlotte Hornets. So you lose one of your premier players, a star, and you still have your superstar though. You still got Paul George, a legit superstar here, who has really been he's the key guy now. He's the key guard.
Don't forget about Roy Hibbert.
And I was about to bring up those. Roy Hibbert and David West and those guys, they're great. But they're no Paul. Paul George is the guy on that team. He's the clear leader for that team. He's the superstar on that team. Not to say that Roy Hibbert isn't. I mean, he's definitely a star in his own right. But Paul George is the guy on that team now, especially since Lance Stephenson is now gone. And you have the FIBA World Championships coming up in basketball. And you're like, okay, well, Paul George, he wants to play. He's going to go over there, do his thing. I wish him well. And then something like this happens, where according to reports now, Paul George is going to be out 12 to 18 months at least. That's all of next year.
It might even be career ending. We saw what happened with Kevin Ware.
I don't think it'll be career ending. It's because, well, Kevin Ware came back from that. I mean, he's still playing now.
But
you
he's
know?
Not nearly the same player as he was.
Yeah, I think Paul George would be fine. If you have the right, you know, medical staff around you, I mean, he'll heal. He's young. You know, he's young. He's got good genes, I'm sure. I mean, he'll be fine. He'll get back on that court. Whether or not he'll be the same player, hey, that's yet to be seen. But he'll get back on the court. But again, and like you said, you bring up a good point, because he may not be that same player, especially, I mean, your mind goes through a lot of mental challenges going through something like that. I mean, we see Derrick Rose, who suffered two ACL injuries, and he talked about how mentally there's a mental hurdle you have to get over, that you to a point where you can trust your body again, that your body won't buckle out on you. And an injury like that, I'm pretty sure, man, it's going to be a hurdle for him. But anyway, I mean, you send your superstar over there, and something like that happens. There is a legit question to be asked, as a GM and a coach, whether or not you should allow your superstar, your franchise guy, to go over there and play, knowing the injury factor that could take place. Now, I'm just laying it out there right now for discussion. I'm going to give you my thoughts on it in just a second. Alex, what are your thoughts really quick?
Yeah, so there are some players who are replaceable. You know, a role player, a three-point shooter, always replaceable. Like you said, Paul George is not replaceable. Especially with the dollar signs and the salary you're spending on him now, with this contract extension, this is simply not a replaceable guy. And although it's not a very similar scenario, but in terms of a franchise player, I mean, let's just say this happens to Miguel Cabrera on the Tigers, and he's out for a year. And this is a World Series or bust team. After 2-3 years, contracts are up, it's all done. For the Pacers, you know, they don't really have a high draft pick to get someone good. They have expiring contracts now. Lance Stephenson just left. Hibbert doesn't have too many years left. So they have, you know, they're in the same kind of scenario where this is their legacy with the best team they have right now, unless a trade is made. So that simply is not replaceable and will set the franchise back for years.
So as if you're an NBA
right,
GM.
And to get to that, if I'm an NBA GM, from a general manager standpoint, I absolutely would not let my player go out and play if I'm a GM. However, as you know, it's a player's decision if he wants to go or not. And that's where it's confusing in the contracts bind. And who knows, maybe we'll see some NBA contracts have a clause in there that says you cannot play in any game outside of the NBA because of your injury and because of what your contract is.
Do you think that should happen, though?
Should there be
a clause that if the GM doesn't want their player playing in national play due to risk of injury, they have the right not to let that player play. Do you think that's do you think that should happen?
From a manager's standpoint, yes, but overall, no. And here's
why. Your personal view is no,
right? And here's why. Because if that's the case, and we saw this with hockey, before NHL players were playing in the Olympics, it was a bunch of college players that were just going out there looking at Miracle, the movie back in 1979. It was a bunch of college players.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would be a little selfish if it were just the NBA players, and I'll get to that in just a second.
Yeah, and I definitely, I see where you're coming from, and I definitely have to take the view of, you know, if the player wants to go over there and play and represent his or her country, why not? Why let him do it? I mean, this is a free country. That's what playing on the USA team is all about. It's expressing that freedom, expressing that you are a part of and amongst the best of the best to do what you do in your respective sport. You have the free will to do that. I don't think that just because you are a part of a certain professional team that team should disallow you due to, and ideally what it comes down to is just selfish reasons. Due to selfish reasons, you can't play in national play. Playing for the U.S. is an honor. It's a privilege. You know, not everybody gets asked to play for the USA national team. It's an honor, and it's an honor, I think,
right,
that everybody should have the opportunity to, you know, to do. And it's all the politics and antics that go with the professional viewpoint of this discussion should totally be out the window. Yeah. I definitely don't.
And
yeah.
And that's the problem is if it's all out the window and that's the view, you're going to be watching the FIBA championships, and it's not even going to be fun to watch. I mean, yeah, the games will be closer. I'm sure Carlos Arroyo, remember when he was playing with Puerto Rico and they came back and beat that great USA team. Sure, that was a crazy game to watch, and the ratings were through the roof on that.
Mm-hmm.
But if there are a bunch of college players playing and you don't see any of the superstars competing like this, the whole world of basketball, the whole popularity is just going to fall.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And let's be honest here. Let's just be completely honest here. Every time you lace up the sneaks and take the hardwood, or you lace up the cleats and take the gridiron, or whatever sports you play, you are at risk of being injured. You know that risk. That's a part of playing sports. I mean, you can get injured, and especially a freak injury like that. I mean, you don't see that often where somebody hits the back sanction of a basketball hoop, goes down and snaps their right leg. You know what I mean? So you know the risk. The risk is there. It's nothing new here. We have a caller right now. Dave, how you doing, Dave? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, good afternoon, Al. Good afternoon, Alex. A couple of thoughts. You do not cage your ego. In other words, Paul George, I look at it from a GM's standpoint or owner's standpoint, is high price advertising. He is promoting your brand. He is promoting the Indiana Pacers.
Right.
It is I agree with you. It is a privilege and an honor to play for your country. It is just nothing more than high price advertising, having your superstar on a national team. He's promoting your brand. You know, for someone who is not familiar with basketball, they're watching the FIBA World Championships. Paul George goes out and gives 20 and 10. And you say, oh, who is that? Well, that's Paul George. He plays for Indiana Pacers. Well, hey, I may need to tune in and watch the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah.
It's just high price advertising. An analogy, the best engineer for the future Corvette, one of your best engineers wants to go over to Germany to go over to a summit of other engineers. He gets on a plane, the plane crashes. I mean, you're sending your best to be the best.
Right.
And to play with the best. So, again, this injury could happen. Paul George could have went up in his own home court, and I say at his house, he could have a court in his house, go up and just doing some slam dunks and have a freakish. It can happen to anybody at any time. It's unfortunate, but you do not cage your ego. You let your ego soar. My second thought, Nicky Hammond. Again, San Antonio is ahead of the curve.
That's right.
They show that they are the most forward-thinking, the most outstanding basketball, if not pro, organization in the world. Again, Pop shows that he is the best coach and the best president in my opinion, I've said that before.
Right.
Yes, there will be a female at the helm of a major college or a major pro sport, in my opinion, within 5 years.
Within Thank 5 years, God, you think so? And what sport would that be if you had to take
Basketball.
A stab at it? Basketball, right. Basketball. Gotcha. Hey, Dave, we're on the same page today, my man, Dave.
Yes, my brother.
All right, you take care, man.
All right.
Boy, yeah, I have to echo each and every sentiment that Dave had just now, Alex. I think he hit it right on the head. And again, I mean, you know the risk that you take every single time you go out there and play. You know what's funny, Alex? I don't know if you know this, but you know I'm a big Michael Jordan guy, right? You know that Michael, you know, in some contracts, this is true because I've heard of some contracts in the NBA by professional players where the team won't allow their players to go out and play just like a regular pickup basketball game because of the risk. And we all know that that's a lot of teams won't even let their players, you know, do extreme sports like, you know, go, you know, own a motorcycle or go skiing. They can't even do that. That stuff is in some of those superstars' contracts. Michael knew that when he got to the league. And it just shows you the type of competitor that Michael Jordan is. You ever heard of the love of the game clause, Alex?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Mike is the one who enacted that. He had this is dead serious, folks. You can Google this. Michael Jordan had the Chicago Bulls input a love of the game clause, and that clause was that, you know, it allowed Michael to play basketball at any time, wherever he wanted, with anybody he wanted, at any point in the year. And, you know, because Mike was so competitive that he would go out to just pick up games and get better and play with guys and just test himself all the time. And, you know, being a competitive guy that he is, he wanted to do that so he can get better each and every day. And, you know, I love that because I feel as though sometimes GMs and the upper echelon politics of professional sports try to control too much, especially when it comes to their superstars.
Ooh.
Yep, I think so, man.
But
especially with the supers, and we see it all the time in sports. If you a perfect example, I didn't even tell you about this. I have not brought this up on the show yet. I can't remember. I can't believe I haven't brought this up. But the other day, Lindsey Hunter, Lindsey Hunter, former Pistons guard. I play pickup basketball with Lindsey Hunter, former guard for the Pistons, because a friend of mine, he plays out at Powerhouse Gym in Novi. And he was telling me all the time that Lindsey comes there with his sons all the time. I'm like, okay, yeah, okay. I didn't even believe him. One day we're playing there. This is a few weeks ago. We're playing there. In walks Lindsey's sons. And I meet his sons. I'm like, oh, okay, they look just like him. He can't deny them, I tell you. and a few minutes after that, they say, yeah, our dad is coming. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And in walks Lindsey Hunter, man. And, you know, Lindsey is the assistant coach. Was an assistant coach on the staff of Mark Jackson, right when, you know, and Mark Jackson is fired. We talked about that here on the show. Mark Jackson got fired and let go by the Golden State Warriors after having a great tenure with them. And I was, you know, just kind of picking the brain of Lindsey after we, you know, after I scored about 30 on him. me and Lindsey, you know, chatted up a little bit about, you know, what he's doing now. And he talked about how he's just waiting to see if Mark Jackson gets back into coaching ranks because he's a part of the Mark Jackson staff now. And he was just saying how it was just so political. You know, the upper echelon of the Golden State Warriors organization just trying to control every single little thing. Every single thing. It didn't work well with Mark Jackson's point of view with the whole situation, and he went out the door. So well, this is a perfect example of just
how do you blame them? Their job is to win. And if it's not winning, it's their call.
But Alex, it's
their team.
But at the end of the day, Alex, you have to let the man do his job. You hired him for a reason. You hired him to be the coach. Let him coach. You stop trying to have. That's the problem what I have. I'm a big Cowboy fan. That's what Jerry Jones tries to do all the time with the Cowboys. He tries to be the coach. He tries to be the guy that's so hands-on. At the end of the day, you hired the man for a reason. Let him do his job, for goodness sake. You know, I hate that.
And in relation to, you know, players in the FIBA championship and general managers having a role, that it's a totally different situation than a coach, Al. I totally understand a general manager wanting to come in there and make sure his... Do I agree with it? Of course not. But I understand from a general manager standpoint.
It depends on the capacity.
Since he's paying him hundreds of million dollars a year.
It depends on the capacity on what the GM is trying to do. If the GM is just trying to see how things are going and wants to have, you know, just kind of an evaluation of where the team is, that's fine. But trying to come in and literally move parts around to coach this team with X and O's.
But we're talking only about GMs controlling whether players can participate in the championship.
Right, and going back to that point, I'd use that as an example to show you how GMs just try to control everything, including their superstars. So I think at the end of the day, GMs, I understand where they're coming from, but this, again, playing for the U.S. of A, that is a special honor. Nobody, I mean, there's very few people in the population of the United States of America that get called up to play and represent their team on the national level when it comes to a sport. That is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. If the person wants to play for the U.S. national team, let the person play. That opportunity won't come around again, period. So I just think, you know, people saying, okay, well, maybe GM should have the decision in this thing. No, I understand it's a business at the end of the day, but, hey, there's a human factor that I feel as though a lot of people are ignoring in this discussion. So, all right. Well, that's part one of our Barbershop Wednesday segment. Again, call in, just like my man Dave just did, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. When we come back, part two of Barbershop Wednesday. Will a woman ever coach mainstream men's American sports? How long will it take, if so, and what sport will it be? Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. What is up, beautiful people? Well, we have just a little over 10 minutes left in the show. Again, we are encouraging you all to be a part of the hands-on discussion here at Current Sports. Our phone lines are now open at 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, folks. All right, well, part two of Barbershop Wednesday. We just finished talking about, of course, the whole Paul George injury and mainstream sports and whatnot, and whether or not, you know, a GM or a coach should have the final decision on whether or not their superstar should be allowed to play on that national stage. You heard our thoughts about it before our second break. And part two, another hot button topic that everybody is talking about has to do with the hiring of Becky Hammon. Yes, she is now the newest assistant coach for the San Antonio Spurs, making her the first ever female coach in the NBA. How about that? It's part two of our Barbershop Wednesday.
I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but healthy conversation.
I love that. I wish you could just play that every day, Alex. Shout out to Cedric the Entertainer. Hilarious movie. Okay, Barbershop Wednesday, part two. Here we go, Alex. So, well, you know, we kind of powwowed about this yesterday as the news broke about Becky Hammon being hired for the San Antonio Spurs. It is such an interesting dynamic because, you know, I kind of agree with our caller. You know, when it comes to Dave, the San Antonio Spurs and Greg Popovich are an organization that is so far ahead of the curve and so far ahead of other teams, I feel like. The way they run their organization, the mindset, the collective team mindset that Greg Popovich has and his just unbelievable basketball mind really serves as a pioneer alone for this sport. And now he brings in the first ever female assistant coach in the history of the NBA and Becky Hammon. I first of all, I loved it. I think Becky Hammon, she was an outstanding player when she played. She definitely knows the game. And, you know, really diving into the reading of how this hire happened and hearing Greg Popovich's comments on Becky and so on and so forth. I mean, it seems as though the players on the Spurs really respect, which I think is the key word in this discussion. They really respect the basketball mind that is Becky Hammon, and they really have a certain appreciation for, I guess you can say, her groundwork in the game of basketball when it comes to her career on the court and also on the sidelines coaching and who she's learned from. So I do think now, again, the question we're asking is, will a female ever coach a mainstream men's American sport? I'm going to say yes, Alex. How long that'll take? I think it'll take between 5 and 10 years. And what sport that'll be, I think it'll be basketball, man. And the reason why I say basketball is because basketball is really the only sport, when you compare men's and women's sports, basketball is really the only sport that has pretty much the same collective rules and gameplay compared to that of the men's, period. I mean, in baseball and softball, the same rules, but a little different setup when it comes to distance between bases and pitching techniques and all that kind of stuff. Football, there is no discussion there. There's not a female football team unless you count lingerie football. That doesn't count at all. When you look at, you know, volleyball, you know, men's American mainstream sports, it's not really popular here in America. Soccer is another one possibly you can compare it to. But as far as here in America, though, it's without a doubt basketball. Without a doubt basketball. So I think there will be. How long it'll take? I'm going to say 5 to 10 years in the sport. It's got to be basketball.
No, I think there will be too. And do I like a woman becoming an assistant coach? Yeah, I think it's great. I think it does a lot for women in business and in a managerial role that we haven't really seen, especially when you're talking about American presidency with the whole Hillary Clinton campaign. You know, that's a big thing too, and I'm sure that will help. But here's my spiel on it. I'm not a sexist. I don't think that women are bad leaders. I'm not saying that women should never be a leader or a coach. I just think there's more to the game of men's professional basketball that a woman may not have the experience doing. For example, and I know, no, hold on.
Okay, I'm about to jump, I'm about to pounce.
I know you said that, you know, you don't need coaching experience. You don't need to have played the game before. We've seen the Lawrence Franks and a lot of these coaches that have never really played legitimate basketball, organized basketball before, that you just need the knowledge of the sport. But for someone like Becky Hammond, who you know, had a marvelous career, one of the top 50 players of WNBA history, obviously a face for the game, but there are some instances and strategies in men's basketball that when you're trying to implement the same defense, for example, let's put in a 1-2-1-1 press, a zone press.
Sometimes, which they run in women's basketball as well.
They do. But sometimes there happens to be a team where you just don't have the speed, or you don't have necessarily, you know, you just physically aren't fast enough to run a certain defense. That happens sometimes. You see it in smaller NBA teams.
What does that have to do with coaching that technique?
But what I'm saying is, if that technique has never been implemented in the WNBA.
It has. It's been used. They use the same zone and presses that the NBA uses.
I know that. But there are some WNBA defenses that can't be used just because of the speed of the game. It's just a much slower speed.
I totally 189.658% disagree with you on that, Alex. I feel as though basketball, if anything, especially when you, and this is another point I want to make, with women's basketball, and you make a good point, they're not as, they may not be
Al,
as
you
as, oh, can we make this point real quick? If in women's basketball, they may not be the fastest or more athletic or as big as those in the NBA. But if anything, not having those attributes, not being athletic or fast enough and so on and so forth, that heightens the fundamentals of the game. Women basketball players are arguably more fundamentally sound than men basketball players in the National Basketball Association. We've seen guys who rely on their athleticism so much in the NBA. I've seen it countless times where they are lazy on defense, where they just don't have that fundamentally sound game. In the women's game, the fundamentals rule the game simply because they aren't as athletic or even compared to the men's game, they aren't on that same level of athleticism and just as physically gifted as those guys.
If that's the case, then you hire her as an assistant coach of fundamentals.
No, but Alex, look, the fundamentals are a part of basketball.
I know that.
Big part of basketball.
But what I'm saying is the NBA, you don't have a Kevin Durant and a Kobe Bryant in the WNBA. Those are totally different kind of players than you would ever see in WNBA or any other basketball league. There's way more complex strategy in NBA basketball than any other organized basketball.
No, it's not. Are you kidding me?
How would you know?
The college game is way more complex strategy-wise than the NBA, for goodness sake. The NBA is a one-on-one, superstar-driven league. The San Antonio Spurs proved that by winning the NBA championship last year with strategy, as opposed to just having a superstar in LeBron James who you basically rely on to shoulder the scoring, to shoulder the overall facilitation to win a basketball championship.
Now you're bashing. Eric Spoelstra.
I am bashing.
The
San Antonio, the Miami Heat strategy was, it was get the ball to LeBron James and let him create. The play is to get the ball to LeBron James, everybody get out the way, and let him facilitate. That's what the plays were. Greg Popovich is a mastermind. He came in there with a collective mindset to get certain players involved. It's beautiful basketball watching them. How many times have we seen a team rely on one or two, maybe three guys to shoulder the scoring load and hope that that's going to get them enough to get by? Which it is for the most part, because I've said it countless times. The NBA defensively is a lackluster league. In college basketball, you're relying on more strategy than the NBA. You're telling me the NBA is more complex in that regard?
No, I'm not saying that with strategy, but I'm saying that there are certain kind of players in the NBA that you've never dealt with as a WNBA coach or player.
That doesn't matter.
But as a head coach, you have to be an athlete. And what I mean by that, don't take that the wrong way, you have to know tons of different aspects to coaching. You have to know how to be an assistant coach, a trainer. You have to know injuries. There are so many things you need to know as a head coach.
Why wouldn't a female NBA assistant coach know that stuff?
Because as a female coach, you may not have a player to deal with like LeBron or Kevin Durant.
What do you
Those
mean by that?
Those players are rare specimens that you can't coach a similar type of player like that.
You don't have to have. Okay, it seems as though you're really harping on experience here. You feel as though if a woman has not had or coached a Kevin Durant type of superstar player, then they won't be able to make that acclimation or adjustment in the NBA game, which
coach, but just even seeing that kind of player or understanding what's going through that player's head.
And this goes back to our point yesterday. How many times have we seen NBA coaches who have not even sniffed the basketball come in and coach the game to perfection? Guys who weren't great players or never even played the game before come in and have supreme success in the game of basketball. That it does not matter. If you know the game up here in your mind, and if you're great at inspiring people around you, you will be successful, man or female, in the league or any sport for that matter. Period.
Oh.
All right.
We got to talk more tomorrow.
Man, we're out of time already? That time flies. Okay. Well, folks, weigh in on this. Go to Facebook.com/currentsports and tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. We are out of time. Great discussion, Alex. I see where you're coming from. I just totally disagree with it. It's fun time on the show, as always, here on Current Sports. Again, join us tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on WKARAM870. Again, Current Sports TV airs tomorrow night. I'll be sitting down with Ithaca football coach Terry Hesbrook, holder of the longest winning streak in high school 11-man football in the state of Michigan, and tied for the longest in the entire nation. Catch that episode tomorrow night on Current Sports TV at 10 p.m. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKRE East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic hump day, and hey, be easy, people.